Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, April 3rd. I'm Ray Graff. Bird expert Rich Guthrie is back in Studio A to share his birding knowledge with you and answer your questions. To take part in today's discussion, give us a call. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you have any question at all about birds, this is the time to call. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here. Cardinals, Hawks, you know, Rich may do the timber doodle dance coming up in the program, so stand by for that, and also stand by for news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds on the program today, and when we do that, we always welcome back our resident avian expert, Rich Guthrie. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He's a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. If you have a birding question, the number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Rich Guthrie, welcome back, sir.
Hello, Ray.
Are you all right?
Yeah.
You sound like you might be fighting a bit of a head cold. Nothing catchy, I hope.
Yeah, let's hope.
Oh, well, thanks.
I'm happy to share. Let me say.
Thanks a lot here in the hermetically sealed Studio A. Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, that's
worse than an airplane.
You know, yesterday we did a sports show, and we had some experts on, including Ashley Miller of Channel 13. She's a sports producer.
Uh-huh.
And I teased the show at the end of yesterday's show, and she said, oh, bird watchers are known as twitchers.
Uh-huh.
Is that a good thing?
It depends on the context.
Where did we get twitcher from?
I don't know the origin of the word, but it is generally a pejorative. When it comes to a birder, you can be a twitcher, a legitimate twitcher, and all is good. However, if you are labeled as a twitcher, then it's not so good because it implies that you're only interested in a tick mark on your life list. See the bird, keep moving.
Okay.
No, you know, in-depth analysis or interest or investigation or observation or appreciation, just kind of like tick, moving on.
Okay.
And, you know, they can be interesting. They typically know a lot, learn a lot, share a lot. Well, it all depends.
But when you're doing a Christmas bird count, you're twitching, right? That's all you do is twitch.
You're doing more than that. I mean, obviously, you're making note of what is out there and what you're doing, and you're contributing. You're making more than just a look-see, move-on application. You're taking notes. You're taking numbers. You have a prescribed route. And it's all with a goal of enhancing or adding to the science. And the same thing goes true with, let's say, eBird. When you're out there checking out a bird on eBird, and you're entering their data and you're submitting it and responding to, let's say, requests for more information to verify a sighting or report, those are all good. And some eBird applications go merely to the question of adding to your eBird list.
Okay, so the last person who called you a twitcher, you fisticuffs ensued?
Yeah, you got it. You're right.
Yeah?
Yeah, sure.
Right, so I shouldn't do that then.
Well, you can if you want. I mean, it all depends on the context. And sometimes it's well-meaning and, you know, it kind of identifies why you're there and what you're doing.
Yeah.
But let's hope that there's some, let's say, deeper involvement behind that twitching.
Okay, all right. Well said. All right, a couple of emails here, and then we'll get back to the phones, or actually start with the phones, and they're already loading up here. Rich Guthrie is our guest. He's very popular. This is from Deb in Knox. Rich, please advise. We took down our bird feeders on Monday due to all the reports about hungry bears coming out of hibernation. A neighbor a couple miles away had his destroyed by a bear on Sunday. Mm-hmm. It's so dull and boring without our backyard birds. When do you think it's safe to put the feeders out again?
November. Uh-huh. Okay, I mean, that's kind of like a glib answer. Change your feeding style. Go to something
really high up.
High up. Or hummingbirds, they're on their way. They're crossing the crossing the Rio Grande as we speak.
And the bears aren't smart enough to crack open the hummingbird feeder?
Well, let's hope they can't get to them. You know, if they ever found what's inside there, they're in.
That'd be very, very, very pleased.
It's better than a honeybee
All right,
hive.
This one is from Tad in Bennington. Hi, Rich. If you could recommend one field guide for the Northeast, which one would it be?
Well, there, I wouldn't say just one. But depends on where you're from. Yeah, and this writer is from where?
I don't know.
Massachusetts?
I just recycled it.
There are several that the American...
No, Bennington, Vermont.
Bennington, Vermont. There are several that the American Birding Association puts out that will apply to Bennington, Vermont and elsewhere. And the one I have here pertains to New York.
Right.
But it is a good Northeast field guide. Birds don't know the boundaries as well.
Right.
And so it's the American Birding Association. And they have put out a number of state-specific field guides. I don't know if they have one for Vermont. But the information I'm in the same is pretty well spills over one border to the other. The other one, which I really like, it's out of print. And you got to work on finding it, but it's out there. And that's Jim Coe, C-O-E.
Yeah.
And it's the Field Guide to the Birds of Northeast North America.
Oh, there you
something
go.
To that effect. Oh, yeah. And it's really good in that, you know, you don't have to worry about what bird you're looking at is it from California or Alaska or Hawaii or Europe. It's Northeast North America.
Perfect.
And so it whittles it down to the few choices that you have. And you could work on those. And it's a very well done book. And unfortunately, out of print, but you can find it somewhere out there.
Now, in your work with eBird, are you finding that a lot of the birds in New York are leaving for lower tax states?
You mean like Texas? Only for the winter.
Okay.
They come back.
All right,
they're snowbirds.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. We started out with Nick in Saugerties. Nick.
Afternoon, guys. Big fan of the show.
Thanks.
I have a weird question for you. Mm-hmm. I just found a dead owl.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big owl. It's large. I'm kind of interested in maybe getting it stuffed. I kind of feel weird leaving it there, wasting it. It's a beautiful bird. It looks fresh, like it just died. I don't know how it happened. Then I was also maybe thinking if there's a way I could reduce it down to the bones to appreciate the anatomy or something like that. And I got in my truck, heard you guys, called up, and figured I'd call for some advice.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, here's the story. None of the above. It's illegal in any form to hold on to an owl, no matter what its cause of demise was. And the reason for that is...
Okay.
It's part of the bird protection laws that are out there. Because years ago, it was kind of a popular backyard activity, is to go out and shoot birds, stuff them, and put them on the mantelpiece. Really got out of hand in a number of different ways. So they cracked down on the whole shebang and said, no more nothing. And that's the law. That's
so
the way
in
it
other
stands.
Words, even though he had nothing to do with this bird's demise,
exactly.
He cannot bring this bird to a taxidermist and
exactly.
say...
Exactly.
That's
and the
a
reason
bit
for that,
no,
it isn't really because, you know, how many, I don't want to say, you know, point any fingers, but it will be so easy to say, well, I found it on the side of the road, you know, when actually the thing is full of lead pellets. So it's kind of, you know, it just says, that's it. Rules of the game, none ever. And, but here's the thing. I'd be very curious what caused this thing to die. Roadkill barred owls this time of year are unfortunately all too common. They just don't know the rules of the road.
Yeah,
they get themselves in trouble when they fly down a highway looking for a mouse that may be crossing the road and get smacked by a truck or what have you.
Yeah,
really, really sad. That's too bad. If the thing, on the other hand, died of some other causes, such as rodenticide, rat poison.
Right.
We want to know about that.
So what should Nick do?
Well, they can contact the New York or the appropriate state agency that might have a pathologist who would want to investigate further. And in New York State, you could look up the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation and check with them. The pathologist will want to have a fresh... specimen to work with and go from there. The other choice is perhaps a university or museum might be interested in, but, you know, I'll tell you the truth. There have been so many this year has been a high number of barred owls in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
They've come down for the winter out of Canada. And so they, there's been a high number of roadkill barred owls. And the museums and the universities are pretty well full of barred owls.
Okay.
They don't, they're big, and they don't have much room or much need for any more. So unfortunately, it all boils down to probably not much.
All right, Nick. It's a long answer for not all much, but there you go.
Yeah, well, there's a lot behind it.
Yeah, I'll just let it be, and I'll just let it be and let it feed something.
Yeah, move it up, if you can. Move it to a safe place so that it's
safe
not...
for him to touch the thing, though? How does he know?
Yeah. Okay. That's not a problem.
All right. Well, Nick, thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Richard P. Guthrie is our guest, and he's a bird expert. He's a little under the weather, but he's holding up very well. We'll be back, and more calls coming up. One 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Vox Pop. Rich Guthrie is here. He is an avian expert. No twitcher he. If you have a question about birds, this is the time to call. One email here, Rich. And actually, why don't you do your list of exciting things?
Oh, coming up. Yes. Oh, let me tell you about the timberdoodle dancing in the sky.
Of course.
Oh, here we go.
Right. Go ahead.
Now's the time. The American woodcock, which is a sandpiper, has given up the sandy shore for the woods of the and the forest.
Ah.
And right now they're doing their courtship thing. They look like miniature turkeys on the ground. They strut around with their tail fanned out and their beak pointed down, their chest all puffed up. And then they go into their sky dance, which is something totally different.
Right.
So here's what's happening. I'll be doing... And anybody is welcome to join in. I'll be doing a timberdoodle dancing in the sky.
All right.
Any night this week. I'm targeting Saturday night, this coming Saturday night, at the Greenland Trust Grasslands down in Coxsackie, Greene County, New York.
Yeah. What if they don't show up?
They'll show up. They're there now.
Yeah.
I know they're there. It's all a question about the weather conditions, wind, rain, cold,
And they're always in the mood to dance? They don't need a couple of drinks?
Wind, rain, cold, dance, no.
Okay.
Nice, sultry spring evening. They're in there.
All right.
So check with the Greenland Trust at greenlandtrust.org. That's green with an extra E at the end, as in Greene County.
Sure.
And you'll get the specifics on location and time and details. But it's going to be in the evening, about 7:15 in the evening. We're going to hang out and listen to and watch for. And it's all about learning how to do it yourself. Take it home with you.
Do people actually go home and do the timberdoodle dance?
No, but they can go home and know where to look and watch for the timberdoodle and can share with the kids and neighbors. You get bragging rights right after that.
Okay,
a couple of other activities going on. Spring is in the air. The Allen Bird Club over there in Springfield, Massachusetts, is going to be doing a walk to Longmeadow and Agawam. That's a half-day trip. That's Saturday, the 6th of April.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Sunday, the next day, breakfast and upriver to Turner's Falls. This is the Allen Bird Club in Springfield at allenbirdclub.org.
Okay.
The Waterman Bird Club down in Dutchess County, New York. It will be going to Norrie Point State Park next Wednesday, April 10th. Watermanbirdclub.org.
Mm-hmm.
Mearns Bird Club, M-E-A-R-N-S, birdclub.org, will be going to Rye Playland.
Oh.
Sounds like fun.
Home of the Dragon Coaster.
Saturday, April 6th. Check with them on the details. And the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club, Norman Skill Farm, and the New York State Museum. That's on Saturday as well.
All right.
7:30 a.m. The Hudson Mohawk Bird Club is hmbc.net. They got to be a little different. And then on Sunday, the 7th, it's Fisher Ferry Nature and Historic Preserve. Again, check with the Bird Club on their website.
Okay.
The John Burroughs Society, jbnhs.org. Spring Bird Wildcard. That's April 13th at 7 in the morning. This is a location to be determined depending on conditions and recent reports.
And this is the William S. Burroughs Society?
John Burroughs.
Oh, John Burroughs.
John Burroughs Natural History Society.
Fine.
jbnhs.org.
Okay.
And a couple other ones. Mass Audubon urges you to get outdoors. Visit their website, Mass Audubon. And Connecticut Audubon, same thing. They have a website, but there's so many activities on there. and so much information. Connecticut Audubon.
Oh, it's getting to be bird season. Isn't this exciting?
Now's the time. Get out there.
Yeah, the timberdoodles are dancing. And this one came in via email from Dave and Joanne in Tallinn, Connecticut. On March 16th, we were visited by a very large flock of grackles, starlings, and red-winged blackbirds.
Yippee.
This flock consisted of many hundreds of birds gathered under one of our feeders. The trees around the feeder were full as well. At the slightest movement, they would rise in a swirling cloud and then slowly return. They returned a couple days later, but only stayed a moment. We've been visited by small groups of grackles and starlings and have seen one or two red wings before, but never together or in such large numbers. Our home is located in an oak forest next to a lake. Is this normal?
Yes, it is. And what it is right now they're moving north en masse. And And they one of them finds a good source of food. They all swarm down. Actually, they don't stay long. I mean, they're on the move. They're anxious to go back up where they're going.
Yeah.
And so they come around. I call them the clean sweep crowd. They came up, pick up all the leftovers and clean up and move on.
And it's normal for all three species to go together?
Oh, yeah. Blackbirds, they flock together.
Okay.
Yep.
And let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. J.D. in Springfield, Mass. J.D., you're on.
Hi, thank you so much, and I really enjoy your show, and I enjoy all the stories that come in. So I have two stories.
Okay.
One is about sparrows, because my kids have been playing with a kite, and the string got all tangled up in the privet hedge. Mm. And so one day I just happened to look out the window, and a bunch of sparrows are out there because the kids gave up on pulling the string out, and the sparrows are all picking at it, and I looked out in a little while, and they had it lined out straight down the driveway, and then one of them was like going along picking up about every 4 inches. Now, I don't know if they picked up the whole thing, because I went on about my business, but however, it was gone. I don't know how that total job was managed, but I thought, oh my God. And then the other one is about my cats, because I've always had cats, and the cats will sit down and watch the birds, but I never saw one of my cats run after one. They just sort of sat there and watched, and I'm sure the birds knew they were there, and they continued doing their bird thing. And so I just wanted to put that out there for cats. Apparently all cats are not vicious, even though they're looking, and people might suspect that. But anyhow, that's my experience. And so thank you so much for all your information and the show and the other shows that you do too, Ray. I just really appreciate that.
Well, J.D., thank you so much for the call. Now, Rich, is this common for the birds to pull the string out and make a straight line out of it?
Well, obviously, they're looking for nesting material.
Yeah.
And this thing here had found a mother load of nesting material, and we're not going to let it go.
Right.
And that it should ball up a whole line of, I don't know how long the line was, but it sounds like a bunch.
Yeah.
I mean, a real bunch.
Driveway long.
And, well, good for the spouse. By the way, it's the female that does all the work in this.
Yeah. So, my house, too, is about
good. Yeah.
I lie on the couch and watch the Mets game. Let's go to Chris in Hamden, Mass. Chris, you're on.
Hey, Ray and Rich. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Good. Love the show. It's one of my favorites on AMC.
Thank you.
My first thing was to revisit something that Rich had talked about on the last show when he was there, was the Heckle and Jekyll controversy.
Oh, yes.
Right. Okay.
Have you reversed your decision yet?
Absolutely. I got so much information. Thank you very much. You know, there's an old saying, if you want to learn, teach.
Yeah.
And I love it because I got so much feedback on that. You're right.
Thanks for bringing it up again, Chris.
You all out there are correct. They were magpies.
They were magpies. Okay.
Heckle and Jekyll.
Fair enough.
It goes too far back for my memory to absorb.
Do you have a follow-up?
Well, they are incorrectly drawn because, there's a lot more white on a magpie than there is on an American crow. So
we give the artist some license.
Yeah. Well. Do you have another question?
Now, the other thing was it wasn't a question more than some advice. I know a lot of times on the show people call in about woodpeckers and banging on their houses.
Yes.
I work in the pest control industry, so a lot of times what it is, rather than territorial marking, it can also be that they're investigating a house that has had issues with carpenter bees in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The female carpenter bee will bore her way into a piece of wood and lay larvae in there, which makes a pretty large protein meal if they can find them.
Yes. And and basically, that's kind of like what I try to say. You know, it's kind of not what people want to hear.
That they have bugs in the house.
See, the carpenter bees or termites or carpenter ants or other critters living inside their structure. So you're absolutely right about that, and that's why I always suggest that they might want to, you know, for their own good, for everybody's good.
Sure.
Check with other sources.
All right, Chris, thanks for the call. The number here on Vox Pop is 800-348-2551. The great Rich Guthrie is with us, and Gary in Schenectady. Gary.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call, Ray and Rich. Like so many others have said, I enjoy this program, you know, extremely, extremely much every time it's on.
Well, thank you.
Anyway, as a cross-country skier who's been through the deep woods for more decades than I'd like to think about again and again, I've often come upon winter flocks, or had winter flocks come upon me, as the case may be, which typically consist of a goodly number of chickadees, mm-hmm. often kinglets, a downy woodpecker or two, and a nuthatch or two or three going along. Well, I know that flock behavior in general, when you think of starlings or something coming along and turning and twisting in flocks, it makes it hard for predators to pick them out, and that's why they do it. But I don't see the reason for winter flocks because, frankly, I think it's quite the opposite. With all that calling going on and gently moving from one tree to another that they are, aren't they just screaming to any sharp-shinned hawk who didn't just fall off the potato truck, who's been around for a little while,
yeah.
Here we are, we're moving mm-hmm. quietly through the woods. Gee, it'll be wonderful to pick one or another of us off. And what's the reason for a winter flock that actually benefits the species involved, especially not the chickadees, who look to me like they're just setting themselves up to be prey?
Little
well,
snack, yeah.
I hear what you're saying, and I love, you know, it's one of the joys of winter is to come across one of these loose association of mixed species out
yes.
in the woods.
Yeah.
The chickadees, the nuthatches, the woodpeckers, the titmice, they're all kind of like buddies, and you know, a mixed bag at that. The reason for it, I suspect, is all about food, and that they're picking up on you, I think, is pretty much, and again, I'm only speculating here, is that if they follow an animal, yeah, that's you, around through the woods, there may be a meal to be had,
yeah.
One way or another, when they're on their own, they're out there searching together, keeping an eye out for predators. I think it is all about mutual benefit watching, so... The chickadees are notorious for finding an owl or a hawk and sounding the alarm and giving attention to where that hawk or owl is. And so I think it's all about finding food and watching out, not necessarily for one another, but benefiting from everybody else's observing. So, you know, all I can say is that I like to think about it as little puppy dogs in the woods. You know, they're friendly, they're association, and... It's one of the joys of winter. We have few enough of them around.
Indeed. Rich Guthrie is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. And Andy in Thurman. Andy, you're on.
Hi. I have a comment and a question about chickadees.
Yeah.
We got lots of them here. And the comment is, if for anybody who's never done it, if you take a little palm full of seed, hold your hand out by the feeder where they're landing, you'll get one to land on your finger and take some seeds, which is really cool.
It is, yes.
It's just amazing.
Well, you know what? They're so adventurous. They're tiny little things that they are. They're really spunky when it comes to it. And they will be more daring than the other birds out there. But the other birds, by the way, will watch and learn as well.
Yeah.
So if you get the chickadees coming to watch to your hand, it may not be long before the nuthatches and titmice are there as well.
Does that happen to you, Rich?
Oh, yeah.
They
yeah.
just come right to you?
Well, it takes patience. You have to build the trust. And
yeah, you got to stay still.
Yes, right. But you're right about that.
My other question about chickadees is, my wife said to me that they changed their call in the spring, and the call sounds like this. And I don't know if she's right or wrong. I just wanted to ask you about that. Is that a chickadee?
Nope.
Because usually you just hear them chirp.
Well, the chickadee gets its name from its call that it makes. It's a chickadee-dee-dee-dee. But in the spring, they go to a song that doesn't sound like that. I'm going to say what that sounds like.
Okay.
But the chickadee song sounds more like it's saying, as one of my students once said, because her name was Judy, it says, here's Judy, here's Judy,
uh-huh.
here's Judy.
Why do they change it in the spring?
It's a song. It's a spring song.
Yeah.
They start in January, and it's kind of like an association for territory and nesting.
Well, I'll be darned.
But the sound that you just described sounds more like a titmouse close relative to the chickadee, and not far. They're nearby. So
yeah, we've got lots of them.
Okay, I'm going to say that, that's the titmouse, and the chickadee has that "Here's Judy" call.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, and I love your show, and I try to catch it every time I can.
Well thanks Andy. We appreciate it. Do that sound again. That's the chickadee.
That's the chickadee song.
Oh, okay.
My whistle is a little weak this morning.
Yes, you need to wet your whistle. Have a little coffee here.
Yeah,
let's take another call.
Up too.
Rich Guthrie is here. 800-348-2551 is the number. And Jim in Adams, Massachusetts. Hello, Jim.
Hey, Ray. How you doing?
Good.
Just like everyone else, we have to compliment your show, and we can't compliment it enough, and Rich is very much a big part of it.
Well, thank you.
He's the main part of it.
Yes, you bet you do, but he is. Yeah, right.
Okay. Just a little comment on talking about bears getting into hummingbird feeders and saying, well, gee, they'll, if they ever find that sweet stuff in there, they'll be right after it like they are after honey in honeybee hives. But that's a misconception.
Uh-oh, go ahead.
The bears are primarily after the unhatched grubs, the larvae of the bees and the combs when they're tearing into those.
Oh, well, there you go. All right.
When they're there, but, you know, protein is a very hard to come by and a very sought after item in the wild food diet of any wild animal.
Well, Jim, that's a great insight. I you know, I was along with the crowd. I always thought it would, you know.
Like Winnie the Pooh.
Honey.
Thank you. That was a cartoon. But it's just like along, people think, well, gee, you know, what could I use better than like cheese or something to lure a rodent to a trap? And they think maybe something sweet might work, but it's not. They're probably after the cheese because, well, people have found it convenient to put a piece of cheese in a trap. And it's kind of a high protein item, too, of course.
Yeah.
And peanut butter works really well, too, because of the high oil or high fat or high calorie content.
Yeah.
Those are the foods they'll go for, the high protein or the high calorie.
There you go. So you want to catch a bear, put
peanut
bee grubs
and,
in a trap.
Fair enough. Well, we've strayed a bit, but thanks, Jim.
All right, bye-bye.
Have a good one.
Okay, thanks, Jim. That's great.
The things you learn. 800-348-2551 is the number. Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's birds and rats and bears and whatever else comes up on the program. Fran in Pittsfield. Fran, you're on.
Hi. My son lives up in Colchester and is an air traffic controller up there.
Oh, boy.
And he brought me last year to a museum of a man who just did bird art. And at that place, I found a book, which is unbelievable as far as Birds of the East. It's called Sibley Birds, S-I-B-L-E-Y, Birds East.
Mm-hmm.
And it's written by David Allen Sibley.
You're absolutely right.
It's one of the best books I've ever had because the first 25 pages tell you how to use it.
Uh-huh.
And they have, it's small print, but it has everything in there. They're beautiful birds.
Well, Fran, you're absolutely right. That's yet another one that comes to mind. And thank you for that. Sibley is one of the premier guides out there. And it comes in several forms, a little almost pocket-sized field guide, as well as desktop version.
Yeah, and this is published by Alfred A. Knopp,
K-N-O-P-K,
yes,
from New York.
Okay.
And it's one of the best books I've ever seen for birds.
Well, good for you. Thank you for that.
Hey, thanks, Fran. We appreciate the call. How many books in your ornithological library?
Oh, come on.
Hundreds?
Numbers have commas in them.
Really? Oh, really? You have a lot of books.
Yeah, right.
Okay, and the birds will come to your hand. How many different species will come to Rich Guthrie's hand?
A few. Because,
really?
And there are books about getting birds to come to your hand.
Why would you want to? They're not clean necessarily, right?
Well, that's not the issue. But it's,
For me.
It's all about just enjoying the birds in different ways out there. And it's a harmless little endeavor.
It's showing off,
but
isn't it, though, Rich?
A little bit, but there's usually
a barbecue. Hey, watch this.
Yeah, but there's usually nobody else around. But I'll tell you something. It can get out of hand. I remember, I used to, and then the chickadees, the whole flock learns the trick and everybody else. And then you'll be walking out to the car and chickadees will be landing on your shoulder saying, hey, come on, buddy. You're supposed to be delivering here.
Here's that sap Guthrie. He's got food for us. Right.
We're good. We're going to mug this guy for his lunch again.
Do you ever get like a turkey vulture to land on your shoulder?
No, thanks.
That'd be cool. All right, back to the phones we go. And Daisy. Hello, Daisy in Holyoke. You're on.
Hi there. I just wanted to say that a number of years ago, we had a ruffed grouse fly into a screen on our sunroom and kill itself. Mm. And I called the local Audubon Arcadian Nature Sanctuary in East Hampton and asked them, you know, I took it over there because I wanted to identify it. And when I was ready to leave, they said, what are you going to do with it? And I said, well, I guess bury it. And they said, oh, well, we'd really appreciate it if you would leave it here and we could feed it to our injured owls that we're rehabilitating. So that's another thing to do with a dead bird.
Well, there you go.
You know, that's of some size.
I really appreciate that. And if there are rehabilitators in your neighborhood, you know of them, then certainly you might want to check with them. But, you know, with, and again, it's all a question of you don't want to, you want to make sure you know how the thing died. You don't want to be handing over just any old
propagating rat poison in the food chain.
Yeah, you're right.
Right.
So you're right about that. That was good advice on their part.
All right, let's take a quick break here. Thanks, Daisy. 800-348-2551 is the number. Rich is our guest. Rich Guthrie, that is. We'll be back. From the pen of the great Neil Hefti, that's Flight of the Foobirds. Count Basie and the orchestra here on a bird edition of Vox Pop. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Quick email here, Rich. And boy, the phones are loaded. We'll do a lightning round coming up.
Okay. All right. I hear what you're saying.
This one is from Jill and Troy. My neighborhood in Troy was overrun with crows, hundreds of them, for months. Suddenly, about 3 weeks ago, the crows disappeared. Now there are all sorts of songbirds around. Any idea what happened?
Yeah. Just as I was saying, they roost together in the winter. They go home in the summer. And they all dispersed back to the Adirondacks or Canada, or northern Maine. So they're here for the winter. They congregate in large groups. And springtime comes. They break up and go home.
We have crows all year long, though, don't we?
Yeah, but only now you're dealing with pairs or maybe extended families, maybe four or five at the max, not hundreds as they were in Troy. And the songbirds are there because you know, you're hearing them.
Ah.
Yeah, so the crows are no longer drowning them out.
Now, you had a couple of quick observations.
Oh, just a matter of, you know, it's spring in the air and birds are out there. They're coming back for springtime, nesting, singing, and what have you. But some of them are already on the nests. And the bald eagle, for example, there are many, many nests of bald eagles in the area now. Thanks very much to our colleagues in the Department of Environmental Conservation and agencies around New England. They're now nesting. One of the best nests to see is from a public park in Hudson, New York. You can go down to the boat launch down there, and there's a nest right across the river on an island, right up in a tall tree.
Oh, cool.
Very easily observed. And from a safe distance. Leave them alone, and they'll be happy. And another one is great horned owls are nesting now. They started incubating their eggs back in January and February, and they're about ready to hatch out and maybe fledgling.
It takes that long?
Yeah. Well, it's... it does. And the young owls are about ready to hatch or are in the nest right now. And at the other end of the spectrum, the Canada geese who came back, or some of them never left, are sitting on their eggs right now. Many of them have paired off. And so, you know, spring has begun. There are things going on and there's more to follow.
All right. Rich Guthrie, our guest. And back to the phones we go. Ryan in Malta. Ryan, you're on.
Hi, guys. I was wondering, how do I either get rid of or deter the starlings? They're pesky. They're definitely chasing away the chickadees at the feeder. I think they might be drilling some holes in the house or trying to find some ways into my old historic house. I already have enough problems that I call Ray on about.
Oh, you're the guy. I remember you. Yeah.
Well, the thing about starlings is, first of all, they will not make a hole for themselves. They will find a hole and use it, and they will do that almost any niche or cranny they can find. And I agree with you. So, starlings are nice birds, but they're not my favorite. As far as the chickadees are concerned, just change the feeder. They chickadees like sunflower seeds and starlings like all sorts of other stuff.
No, they don't have. Oh, really? Because I have mostly sunflower seeds in there, and the starlings are going. They'll come by and.
Yeah, that's
they're
not.
Bullies.
Yeah, I know they're bullies, but their favorite food is not sunflower seeds. They'll go for easier stuff.
Good.
I know they raid my suet feeders, and they're hogs about it. But and they're easily discouraged. They're one of the skittiest birds out there.
They're okay. So there's nothing you can really do. They're just. They have their place in the bird world, and there's no way to really deter them from coming around.
Well, if you can patch up the holes where they might be finding a nest opportunity, that's the path to take.
Okay.
So discourage them that way.
Thanks, Ryan. And over to Frank and Troy. Frank, you're on.
Hello. I had a question. I was wondering, how come you never see any baby pigeons? I mean, do they leave the nest when they're fully grown?
Yes. Most birds will stay in the nest and wait until they can actually fly. And by the time they can fly, they pretty much look like the adult bird. They'll have a lot of markings that are indicative of an immature bird, but unless you really look closely, they pretty much look like the adult. And I tell you, the baby pigeons are one of the ugliest little baby birds out there.
Oh, that's a terrible thing to say.
Well, yeah, but you know what?
We're all God's creatures, yes?
Yes, right.
That'd be nice.
Not disparaging. It's just, you know, works of art, they're not.
Well, there you go.
But I tell you what, when they grow up, I love pigeons, and they're wild out there. I mean, it's as wild as they are. They're great flyers. They're great to watch their behavior.
But as their kids, boy, forget it.
Well,
just stay out of Rich's way.
Fortunately, they stay out of sight, out of mind.
All right. Frank, thanks for that one. And let's go to Bill in Hamden. Bill, you're on.
Hi. I'm calling because I just finished putting up a Purple Martin house.
Mm-hmm.
Way up on a three-section pole. I have three bluebird houses that I've had for a few years. Every year I have the same issue, though. I have this: the bluebirds do arrive, and they start nesting, and then the sparrows come, and they seem to have a battle, and the sparrows always win out. The bluebirds always move on. Is there anything I can do to prevent, I'm anticipating that's going to happen with the Purple Martin house also. Is there anything I can do to discourage the sparrows, or...
Well, when it comes to Purple Martins in this area, first of all, I think, unfortunately, they're just not around. We don't have, except for a few exceptions, we really don't have Purple Martins in the area. And the houses will go unnoticed and unused. There are a few exceptions, but they have pretty demanding requirements. So I would say that the Purple Martin houses will probably remain vacant or occupied by sparrows for the most part.
Yeah.
As far as the bluebird nest boxes are concerned, you're right about that. The house sparrow is notorious for being very destructive when it comes to nesting bluebirds. What I recommend is you go to the Bluebird Society, and I go to the New York Bluebird Society website, and they will have some suggestions in there about controlling house sparrows in bluebird nest boxes and a lot of other information that, if you're a bluebird fancier, will be useful.
Mm.
So go to the Bluebird Society of New York and check out their information in there. There are means of controlling them, but... It depends on the specific situations.
What about blue jays? Do we have plenty of those?
Oh, plenty of blue
jays. I haven't
seen
too many in the last couple of years around my house.
Oh, they're all down at my house.
Yeah?
That's all right.
They're
tough
birds.
I like my blue jays.
Yeah, I do too.
They're very sassy.
They are. That's a good way to
And what I like about them, too, is they nest on my porch.
Oh, yeah?
They on the trellis in the grapevines.
You don't want them landing on your hand.
Oh, sure, of course.
They'll come?
Oh, sure.
Really?
Well, not to my hand, no. They do allow close approach, but one of the books I mentioned does have as part of the cover photo a blue jay on somebody's hand.
Really?
So, not a goal for me. It's okay. I'm happy with how they are.
Let's go over to Millie in Bennington. Millie, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
I heard the thing about the big owl dead, and there was a report on... Vermont radio about a couple months ago that those big owls were starving.
Well, it could be. You know, when they come down, when they're forced out of their northern territories, they are the ones that come down here are usually the young, inexperienced, and also stressed. And when they come down to, let's say, Vermont or New York or Massachusetts, they're not necessarily coming down to Nirvana. They're coming down to a place where it's still a great struggle to make it through the winter nights, the cold, long winter nights. So,
the snow cover the main problem for them finding food?
Not really. It's the amount of available food. They can find a good, healthy owl can find food through the winter, no matter what nature puts up in front of it. But one that doesn't have the skills or experience or strength or health is going to be adversely affected.
Hmm.
So, yes, that's a factor for sure.
Okay, there was a young one up on my garage roof, and I watched him quite a while there back in February, and their head, my goodness, it turned almost all the way around.
Well, they do that, yes. It's not all the way around, but they have a very flexible turning radius for vision.
Yeah. Okay, that's it for me.
Well, Millie,
thanks for the call. Yeah.
And now let's go over to line six, and it's John at Oneonta. John, you're on.
Hi. I have a woodpecker that for the past several years has been, pecking on the gutters, and the owl isn't working, the fake owl.
Oh, the fake owls rarely work.
Right. Yeah. You're right about that.
Okay.
So that it's using the gutters as a sounding board. It's just drumming for the effect of the noise that it's making.
Mating season,
territorial.
Yeah.
And they do that just to create some volume in their voice. That's their song.
It ends, though, right?
It ends when they're, nesting season, territorial season has ended. So,
it goes on for several weeks.
Yeah, okay. Well, they're setting up territories now. They're year-round residents, so they'll start early in the year. And, the best thing you could do is somehow damping the effect by putting some sort of a cloth or what have you. It's not an easy task, but it's a harmless task.
No.
It's a harmless effect that they're not going to damage your aluminum gutters up there or whatever.
I love that sound. They're very loud.
I know. It starts at daybreak practically.
Yep.
Well, that's their job. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they found the best.
Okay.
Usually they use a hollow log or a dead tree.
Yeah.
Just for the wood of this acoustical effect.
But I mean, aluminum.
Right.
Got it.
All
that's
the
great.
Better.
It's like having a guitar amp.
Thank you for that, he says.
All right, over to Tony in North Adams. Hello, Tony.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I had a bird coming around the last few days while I was outside, like boiling sap. And at first I thought it was a junco, but then I don't know if there's eastern phoebes around here. But it's not very shy. It would come fairly close and land. And a few times, like some of the bark that I had peeled off the logs before had little grubs in them. And it would fly down, but it was just sort of like hover, almost like a flycatcher would, but close to the ground and then back up to this perch. But then later on, it did actually land on the ground and pick up a few of the grubs from the barks. And I don't know, I'm kind of baffled. It's grayish color, but it's not gray like a junco.
I think you nailed it there with eastern phoebe, which is in fact a type of flycatcher. And in fact, they're one of the earliest migrants to return to our area. Phoebes are not shy. They're very approachable, and they will come close, especially, if you're working in a benign way, a non-threatening way to them, which is boiling sap. What could be more harmonious? So, they're out there, and I would suspect that it's an eastern phoebe. They have that distinctive call that sounds like they're saying their name, a sneezy phoebe.
Yeah.
So,
all right, well,
it's a type of flycatcher, and they will come down, flutter, and come down to the ground for grubs and the like.
All right, let's go to, I think we X'd out your name by mistake. You're in Dalton, Mass. What's your name?
Ashley, not Brown.
Hello, Ashley, you're on.
Hi there. I'm just wondering what type of owls are around here.
Well, that's a good question. There's probably about five or six different owl species, from the great horned owl to the tiny little silhouette owl. And in between, the barred and the eastern screech owl, the long-eared owl. And as winter is winding down, there may be a snowy owl around as well. So,
what do they look like?
Well, I would recommend checking out one of the field guides. They're generally brown in color. almost like a no neck appearance, a fat head, wide neck, goes almost straight down. You know, it looks like a sack of potatoes in a tree.
Nice.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, right. Oh, well, you know, it's in other words, it's just a sort of like a elongated round form. The white snowy owl, of course, is very distinctive in appearance, but they all have that fat neck look to them.
But they're so elegant when they fly.
Oh, and silent.
Yeah.
I mean, a beautiful sight to watch in silent. So, a lot of different variety of owls that may be around.
All right, over to Larry in New Baltimore. Larry.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, I live in New Baltimore. We have a small pond, and I believe we have some ringneck ducks visiting. They're black, white, and they have a distinctive white-tipped bill.
Mm-hmm.
Sibley says they're uncommon. I didn't know how uncommon they are around here and if they're just passing through.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of those descriptions are generalizations. And the ringneck duck, as you described, is probably better be called a ring-bill duck. From what you mentioned there, they do have a conspicuous white ring around their bill and a very inconspicuous purple ring around the neck, which, very rarely is it ever visible. It's so dark against the dark black head. But in any event, they are uncommon, except this time of year. They're migrating from south to north, and they do migrate in groups and will congregate from 10 to 100 in appropriate quiet ponds and the like. So ringneck ducks in the area right now are passing through in large numbers. They don't stick around. They continue on up into the Adirondacks and up into Canada where they'll be nesting.
Oh, because there's a nesting pair of Canada geese. They seem to be coexisting well.
Yeah, they waterfowl tend to get along well together, different species together. So Canada geese and ringneck ducks and all the variety of ducks will commingle.
All right, quickly here, we go over to Kevin in Belchertown. Kevin.
I'll try and make this quick. I just wanted to refer to the story about the birds lining up the string and gathering up for a nest. One morning I was sitting out on my porch having a cup of coffee, and I noticed a chickadee had landed on our doormat. We have a dog that tends to shed, and it was the funniest thing. The chickadee gathered up all of the dog hair, and it kind of looked over at me, and it almost looked like it had a mustache because it had all this dog hair hanging out of its face.
Yeah.
He took it away, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And then a couple of minutes later, he came and landed on my leg. I happened to be wearing shorts and started trying to pluck the leg hairs off of my leg to
Yikes.
Go and take it for his nest. Anyway, I just thought it would be fun to share the story.
Well, he got away with the dog hair to see where he could go from there.
Well, Kevin, thanks a lot. I guess we'll have to leave it there. Richard Guthrie, if people want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com. P as in Peter.
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
And also greenlandtrust.org. And that will be about the programs that we have coming up.
The Timber Doodle Dance, right?
Timber Doodle Dancing in the Air.
I can't wait. Rich Guthrie and the Timber Doodle Dance. Next week, we'll do the Watusi on the program. Support comes from the Palace Theater in Albany, presenting the Three Stooges Film Festival Monday, April 22nd. It's an evening of antics and slapstick on the Palace Theater's big screen. Tickets at palacealbany.org. Studio KTM Organic Hair Salon, featuring individual attention in a private environment with cutter and colorist Kristen Marquette using Naturalique organic products, studiokTM.com. And Vision XL Eye Care, Lake Katrine exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames where eyewear is an art, visionxleyecare.com. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie for being here. Thank you for listening. Great calls, as always. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Carol Lapani took the calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, astronomer Bob Berman returns to his launch pad here at WAMC. It's in the script. It's a launch pad. Stand by for news.